Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. What do you think of when you think of spies? And what do you think of when you think of the 60s? Well, my guest has thought of both those topics, and he's written a book about them. Tom Shabilla is author of James Bond and the 60s Spy Craze, published by Applause Books, available April 2nd. On Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places as well. For everything about Tom, you can follow him on Facebook. And Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you very, very much for having me. And I'm glad I could be an intriguing person.
You are. You are. So here, I want to quote from your introduction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here we go. Secret agents and spies typically working for Western governments were also being romanticized. Not much was known about them, but spies were fictionalized and stylized in pop culture. Inspired by Las Vegas lounge lizard cool and traditional British style, spies were portrayed as swinging international jet setters, suave, sophisticated, and well-dressed playboys, tough and incredibly smart and cunning. They were an antithesis to the beatnik and emerging hippie counterculture lifestyle, with perhaps the exception of the break with sexual morals. End quote. Well, that's quite the intro to the book.
and that one, that actually was one part of the book that, because the book is so research-based, having to describe what spies were was just this constant. That was one part of the book that I think I wrote and rewrote and wrote and rewrote many different times, just looked at it. Because, yeah, you're right. You know, it's quite the intro because it's difficult to explain and put a face on it. But yeah, you saw again, these people that were working for Western governments. So they had these, well, to use lingo of the era, they were real square jobs, but they also had this lifestyle where they were, going out. You know, they were swinging 60s guys. They were, like I said, lounge lizard cool. So there is a lot going on in 60s spy films beyond what their occupation was.
But what took you down this rabbit hole to begin with?
Well, my first book was entitled Primetime 1966-67, and it was about the first season that every show on ABC, NBC, CBS in primetime were in color. And
in living color, at least on NBC.
Pardon?
In living color, at least on NBC.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So actually the early drafts of that book was focused on the Beatles, Bond, and Batman. And I fell down this Batman rabbit hole and started writing about the season a lot more. And the Bond stuff kind of went by the wayside, yet there still was a chapter on spies. And it's something that I wanted to dive into a little bit more. And two summers ago, I was reading a spy novel, and just something sparked in my brain, and I started watching a few spy movies, and the rest is history. I just couldn't stop writing. I couldn't stop researching after that.
I want to get into the sausage making just a moment, because most people don't like to see that, especially in politics, but in book writing, what kind of research did you do? Mainly, was it going to the library? Was it going online and looking?
Yeah. So
how did you do your research?
So thankfully, newspapers.com has been just an invaluable resource of looking at what people were thinking at the time. And that was really my big, what I always wanted to accomplish is look at research from the time. I don't want to look at it from a contemporary point of view. I don't want to say, oh, you know, here's what we would think about this right now, or look at it and say what a modern critic said or would say.
In other words, you didn't want to apply cancel culture to what you were researching.
Right. I didn't want to apply, you know, kind of cancel culture or just any kind of modern sentiment to it. And I didn't want to look at it from a perspective of, oh, James Bond had this gadget, but in 2024, everybody has this on their phone. Yeah. And also, I want it to be a book that if you read it today, if you read it 5 years from now or 20 years from now, the information still stays the same. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really going to get outdated. Sometimes you read a book and you can tell, oh, this book is a product of whatever year it was written, the 70s, the 80s, 90s, whatever. So I want it to be a book that hopefully stands the test of time. And yeah, and again, yeah, I don't want to look at it from that modern perspective. So a lot of newspaper articles from the time, a lot of magazine articles and interviews, again, from the time. And I didn't want to look at, again, a modern interview from people like, oh, I didn't like working on that show. I wanted to know what they said at the time. So, you know, and sometimes views change. It's kind of interesting. The one interview I found from Roger Moore, who played on show The Saint and later became James Bond, at the time hated James Bond. You know, no, I could never be James Bond. James Bond's, I think he called him an amoral figure. and, you know, maybe 6 years later, he's playing James Bond. So it's kind of interesting.
I think Roger Moore also performed in The Prisoner, if I remember correctly.
No, Roger Moore wasn't on The Prisoner. That was Patrick.
Oh, yeah, right. You're right.
Patrick Ewing from Secret Agent Man.
When you started to research it, did you get a chance to talk with anybody from that era, either producers, directors, writers, stars?
No, again, I really wanted to keep it from the era. I think sometimes when you do kind of more modern interviews from people, you get a story that, and everybody's guilty of this. You don't remember that story. You remember telling the story 20 times. So I wanted to get, you know, again, from the era, get a snapshot of that.
When you wrote it, though, you're still coming from your perspective as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And not from that era. Were you able to share some of your writing with friends or associates to give you feedback to make sure you're on the right track as far as?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I have some very creative friends and, you know, friends and family members that certainly are very creative and would give some really great feedback and come back to me and say, you know, I don't understand this part or, you know, this is really interesting. So, yeah.
I just realized who you remind me of. I'm sure you've heard this before. Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes. and actually, I do get it a lot, but I've had the pleasure of meeting and being around Gilbert Gottfried before his death. And one of the things I said, you know, my entire life I've gotten that I remind people of you. And he said, oh, I'm very sorry.
That sounds like what he would say.
Yeah. And actually, another kind of not necessarily off the subject, but another project that I am currently working on that's actually coming out a day before my book is released. There's a documentary entitled Drew Friedman, Vermeer of the Borscht Belt. About the artist Drew Friedman. Mm-hmm. I'm a producer on the movie, and that's premiering on April 1st. So
excellent. There you go.
And it features Gilbert Gottfried and several interviews about Drew Friedman before Gilbert's death.
So it comes full circle.
Yeah.
So getting back to the book, James Bond and the 60s Spy Craze, Tom Shabilla is the author whom we're talking with, or I'm talking with, not we, there's no royal we here, just the unroyal I. So of all the people that you wrote about that had an influence on people's perception of spies, it seems to me that Ian Fleming is the key man. Am I right about that? Or
sure.
Right?
Yeah. Ian Fleming is absolutely that. Ian Fleming certainly got the ball rolling with and what you talked about in the intro, kind of making that archetype of what we think of as a spy. And you know, again, he's a guy that came out of post-World War II, or came out of World War II and started writing post-World War II and created this character, again, that's something that we now think of as kind of that archetype of a spy and what a spy is and what a spy does. So certainly Ian Fleming was a very big inspiration to that. Another figure in the book that I think I talk about quite a bit is President Kennedy, that President Kennedy was a big Ian Fleming fan. And him naming From Russia with Love one of his favorite books in 1960 really propelled it. That, I think, really started getting things on the map where Saltzman and Cubby Broccoli purchased the rights to his novels in order to turn them into films.
And he also pushed Ian Fleming a little bit on Alan Dulles, the CIA director at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. The CIA director, Alan Dulles. And there was some really cool interactions that I found in the Kennedy Library that they, if you read between the lines, Dulles makes it seem like he and Kennedy got together and almost like there are things that we could do that were inspired by James Bond novels. So it's kind of interesting. Like they probably thought, well, we could kill Castro by doing this. So
exploding cigar or sending over, sending over the Bay of Pigs, that whole thing. Or not sending over the Bay of Pigs, but the Bay of Pigs disaster may have been influenced by Ian Fleming. Who knows? You also talk about some of the other TV shows at the time, but before I get into those as well, in the title of the book, part of the title is Craze. And so clearly there was a popularity with not only James Bond and Ian Fleming's creation, but other TV shows as well. Why was there a craze? In other words, was it simply the Cold War at a certain point in time generated this craze, or just television networks decided, which at that time they had a lot more power. There were only three of them at the time. If they ran shows about spies, it would generate some excitement, or was it somehow just Ian Fleming generating all this? I guess what I'm asking is, how did it become a craze? That might be the better way to phrase it. I'm a little under the weather with pollen in my brain, so it took me a little longer to get this question out.
D, all of the above. again, you had Ian Fleming and again, President Kennedy. You had, just the right time of in right era. Again, in television, movies, everything, this became a craze. You know, you had when Dr. No was released, and then the fall From Russia with Love, then once Goldfinger was released, it became a full-blown craze of James Bond. I found some really great articles of retailers talking about that James Bond was the biggest seller of items for the Christmas holiday of like 65 and 66. You would find articles about just how just James Bond branded items were selling very, very well. There were a number of toys that were released that, again, were spy themed, that had the general James Bond connection, and just a whole ton of movies in the States, in England, in Europe, all throughout Europe. There were a number of European co-productions that were like West German, Spanish, and Italian. Italy was probably the biggest exporter of spy films. There were a number throughout Asia, Mexico. And in the book, I talk about things that played in the States. One of the criteria I did have was it had to have played in a theater or aired on television in the United States in the 1960s. Otherwise, I'd probably still be writing the book because
exactly. you mentioned television. There was, in fact, some were serious and some were more comedic, such as Get mm-hmm. Smart. But you had The Avengers, which was kind of both dramatic and comedic, very subtle. Right. Danger Man, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., all of that. You mentioned toys and merchandise. So it was a craze. There's no doubt about it. When you decided to write the book, you're not writing it as an academic exercise. You're really writing it more for popular consumption, unless I'm misinterpreting the book.
No, absolutely. No, I did not write it as a as an academic pursuit or anything. Again, I want it to be something that you could read about it. You could learn about these shows. You could use it as a reference journal. You could use it as a reference point. You know, Get Smart comes on the air. You want to read a little bit about Get Smart, or you've heard about a spy movie. You could reference the book on that.
It's interesting from the point of view, you wrote the book, as you say, so that it's not trapped in a period where it can become outdated. So it'd be interesting to have a panel of people together. This might be something you might want to organize as just a promotion or publicity aspect to it. Have a group of different generations read the book and then comment, because you could have someone from the 60s, someone from the 70s, someone from the 80s. And
it's not a bad idea. I like that.
Yeah, how they interpret what you've written, because I'm from that era, so I understand where it came from and where it is now. It's more campy, I guess, these days than it was when it first came out. But I think that would be great to see, just because someone reading it in 2024 would certainly get a nice historical perspective and get an insight to the craze, but may not feel it in their bones the way someone that was around in the 60s or even into the 70s might. So just a thought there.
I like that.
What you're busy full-time teaching as well as writing, right?
Yes. Yes. Full-time professor at Luzerne County Community College in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre area in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And
do you find that because of technology being what it is today, that you could be out in Pennsylvania and have no problem writing about a book about, in many cases, Hollywood produced productions, whether it's movies or TV?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great. So, yeah, and certainly it helps the research process.
Yeah, so you don't have to go to the musty library shelves and try and find clippings from 1963 or something like that.
And also, you know, working at a higher ed institution, certainly when I couldn't find something, when I found a reference to something, I have librarians who are there to help me find the things that I need. So they were a huge help.
I bet. When you set up your table of contents, and I can read just a couple of chapters of it. Mm-hmm. One would be James Bond, clearly, as chapter one, but you have the other top agents, Derek Flint, Harry Palmer, and Matt Helm. You may have American Cloak and Dagger as another chapter, Her Majesty's Secret Service, Euro Spy Espionage, etc. When you set it up, clearly, once again, Ian Fleming, James Bond is at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, James Bond, again, is where everything spread from. And I made sure that I talked about in every movie, certainly its relation to James Bond. And every movie had some relation. Every movie, every television show had some relation to James Bond. They were trying to do something like James Bond, or trying to spoof James Bond or parody James Bond. They were, or just at least capitalize on the name, capitalize on the spy craze. You know, you even had films like, it was called Operation Kid Brother, or OK Connery, it was called, which employed Neil Connery, Sean Connery's brother, as the lead.
Right.
And hired a couple James Bond staples, even Miss Moneypenny and M. And again, tried to make their own Bond film, just capitalize on the name, Neil Connery. So that's one of my favorites. Or even a film, which was a film that I had never seen. I think I'd heard about it a couple times. The Fat Spy. It was Jane Mansfield's last film. It starred Jackie Leonard. And it was...
well, it's clearly comedy then.
Yeah. Phyllis Diller was in it.
Right.
And it was a terrible film. And it had very little to do with a spy.
Right.
But they just crowbarred it in there to get a spy character. And in that one, I got some really great information and really great artwork from Owen Klein, who was the director's grandson. Owen Klein's a director now, and his mother is Phoebe Cates, and his father's Kevin Klein. So,
mm-hmm. I think even Marty Allen and Steve Rossi did a spy movie.
Yeah, Last of the Secret Agents, wow. And also starred with Nancy Sinatra as well in that. And that was before she did You Only Live Twice, the James Bond theme. So, there was some, that in that case, I think the James Bond films kind of followed suit on her.
When you started your research, clearly there were spy movies in the 40s, maybe even in the late 30s, but certainly in the 40s and even in the 50s.
Yeah, they went back to the silent era, really.
Right, even the silent era. So what was it? I guess I have to go back to what we started talking about was what triggered this at that moment? And you mentioned President Kennedy having some influence in terms of popularizing some of it. James Bond, Ian Fleming had it as well. But there's been such a interesting spy history throughout the... Mm-hmm. Not even decades, but centuries. They had spies in Tsarist Russia. They had spies going back, obviously, even in other centuries as well. So I guess going back to, was it the one thing, was it Ian Fleming that got it going in terms of you had television now, you had President Kennedy, you had the Cold War?
Well,
is that what led to the Cold War?
And also, Dr. No, also unlike those other films, films like, again, starting with Dr. No, sex. there was sex. There was, a lot of violence in the film. It's a violent film. It's an action film. And prior to Dr. No, there wasn't really much in terms of, a full-fledged action film. Obviously we had films with violence, the film noirs of the 40s.
Right.
But again, just a full-fledged action film where there's, car chases and again, violence and sex. And that just kind of mashed everything. And really, again, right time, right place, starting into the 1960s, that really started kicking that off.
What was the most surprising thing you found? There may have been more than one when you did your research. Did you come across something that just, I don't want to use that phrase, blew your mind, but certainly triggered something that you never thought about before that you were surprised to hear, either about a personality, maybe it was Ian Fleming, mm-hmm. or a character?
I was surprised, again, speaking of Ian Fleming talked about how big a fan President Kennedy was. And I'd heard that Kennedy was a fan, but I just didn't know to what extent. Again, talked about meeting President Kennedy and right before Kennedy was elected president, still Senator Kennedy. He talked about, meeting him and Jackie O and just how big of fans they were. That really surprised me. A really cool one that I found was... In Goldfinger, President Kennedy was still alive, and they had to call in a special favor to film at Fort Knox. And they said, we think we know a guy who would be interested in this. And also, From Russia with Love was President Kennedy's last film that he had watched before he was assassinated. It was several days before.
In your research, did you happen to find out if the government, either the CIA or other agencies, secretly pushed the promotion of the spy craze so that it benefited some intelligence agency?
I've not heard that, but that's a good, I like that theory. You know, yeah, we think that there's something else, but in reality, they're not. No, I'd not heard that, but that would be
there's your next book.
Good theory.
The thought that did you read all of the James Bond books or see all of the James Bond movies?
I watched all of the movies. I've read most of the books.
What's your favorite James Bond, whether it's a film or the book? What's your favorite James
Bond? Well, my favorite James Bond, I love Goldfinger. Goldfinger's probably the first James Bond movie I've ever watched and just remains a favorite. Novels, I like Moonraker. Moonraker was cool, which is absolutely nothing like the book, or nothing like the film, excuse me. I once saw the book for sale at a antique store, and it said Moonraker. It was the Moonraker novelization of the movie, and it was novelization based on a book based on a movie based on a book title, something like that. Moonraker was they made that because there was a title and they wanted to make a film with laser beams to knock off Star Wars.
From your research, what was the most popular James Bond film? Not your personal favorite, but the
also Goldfinger. I think Goldfinger was the peak in terms of box office. But I think that is Thunderball. I forget off the top of my head, but I think it was Thunderball. Thunderball was the highest grossing, at least.
And your favorite spy movie separate from the James Bond series?
Secret Agent Super Dragon. It's an Italian spy spoof. And it's awesome. The first time I saw it was on Mystery Science Theater a long time ago. And I never really gave it a chance. And I watched it alone by itself without the Mystery Science Theater. And it's an awesome movie. Total James Bond knockoff, total James Bond spoof. But a lot of action, it's James Bond on steroids. And that's really what those films became. The early James Bond films were a little subdued, that he didn't really have much in terms of gadgets, but by Goldfinger, by Thunderball, by You Only Live Twice, they started going above and beyond when it came to gadgets. And those films, the Italian films, the other spy films, really started to push James Bond into that direction of being a super spy.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Tom Shabella. He is author of James Bond and the 60s Spy Craze. It's published by Applause Books. It's available April 2nd on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And you can follow Tom on Facebook. And Tom, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very, very, very much. I appreciate it.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.